Welcome to Season 6, The Starry Achievers. This podcast season is dedicated to all the achievers who had a startup and is a founder of their own startup. Today we have a lovely guest from India, Mrs. Ekta. Welcome to the show, ma'am.
Hi, Hina. Thank you for having me on your podcast. I'm really, really excited to do this. First of all, because, we are schoolmates, so there's always so much enthusiasm to do things for people who study with you. There's always that different friendship you share. So thank you so much for having me on today.
Absolutely agreed on that fact that, yes, it's always a pleasure and an honor, you know, to know somebody who you have spent such a long time in school days. And to see what wonderful work they are doing. And you are doing an amazing work.
Thank you so much. I hope to contribute my little bit to society. I just hope it's working out. That's all.
And it is working out. Today we have a guest who is the founder of Invisible Scars. And Ekta, if you could just highlight what this is all about. And why such a unique and a very valuable name?
Okay, what happened is I had a very varied career. I moved from many years of retail business into the corporate sector. But there was never really any sort of fulfillment. You know, I was there. I was in the rat race. I was doing a lot of things. But there was never really any fulfillment. 2012, I got married to this wonderful man, Vivek. And it is after that I got an opportunity to sort of pause a little bit, take a break from my career, and then sort of focus on something which I was really passionate about. I have always had, an inclination to help people, but I was never really able to give a structure to that help. Definitely a lot of human, issues were things that I automatically caught my attention. Now, domestic violence was one of those human issues that caught my attention. And I have seen domestic abuse from very, very close quarters because I have grown up in a very, very conservative society. When I was being raised, although there was no violence in the environment around me, but there was so much of emotional and mental abuse. But the problem with that emotional and mental abuse was that it was normalized. And because it was normalized, nobody paid attention. It was just sort of put in the background. It was like, if there's a marriage happening, it comes as a part of your life. It's acceptable. So everyone has to just deal with it. But I also suffered very personal consequences due to it. Of course, I would not like to go into the details too much, which always somehow was there at the back of my mind. And when I got this opportunity to sort of stop in life and look back at what makes me more passionate or what drives my interest, I think domestic abuse, especially emotional abuse, was one of the issues that I saw. And seeing it from such close quarters, I realized that people don't have safe spaces for domestic violence and domestic abuse. So in 2016, I kind of on Facebook decided to have a safe space where at least people who were going through it could share their experiences with each other, learn from each other, and be together. And so that is how Invisible Scars came into being. You asked me the name, the reason for the name, as it is now evident. It was because our tagline is that the scars that you don't see are the hardest to heal. And hence Invisible Scars. Initially, it started off as a safe space, and over a period of time, we've grown by leaps and bounds.
That's really, heartwarming, because as you had just said, yes, the scars which are not visible are the hardest to heal, and it takes time. And you have correctly mentioned that, yes, in our society, it is prevalent, much prevalent, as we see. And as a therapist also, I have gone through, like, yes, to see the emotional aspect, the emotional abuse aspect, you know, to have it normalized and, yes, acceptable, and you have to bear with it. That is a very big toll on the mind and the health aspect of any person who has to bear that.
Correct. Absolutely.
So tell me, did you have any idea that you will be, you know, doing this work, especially when you'll grow up or something?
No, not really. So I was always, like I said, sort of, I always gravitated towards human issues.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of my thing. So if anybody was in distress, I would be the first person to run to help and things like that. But I never really thought it could be a career choice when I was growing up and, you know, when we were studying, we had very limited career choices. We didn't have the internet at that point of time, you know, to give us so much information, or so many avenues had not really opened up. And so the regular, you know, become an engineer, become a doctor, or maybe become a teacher, you know, 3 or 4 career options that, you know, I sort of thought that I would grow up getting. And being raised in a conservative household, I was always sort of never directly told, but always told that, you know, marriage is something that has to happen. It is sort of a trophy. So no matter how much you educate yourself or how successful you become in a career, you are really only successful if you are married to someone and you have children. These are things that were always prevalent in society at that point of time. Never directly told to a girl, but when you are seeing everybody around you in the same situation, you're seeing your cousins getting married and everyone just running towards that one goal, which is marriage and children, you sort of think that is what you're going to do. So I always used to think probably I'll end up being a good homemaker. I don't like using the word housewife, but homemaker someday. I never really thought I would have a career per se. And definitely I did not really think it was going to be a career like this. But I knew that, you know, I sort of had to make a difference somewhere. So I think that always drove me towards doing something different. And if you see my career graph, you will see that I switched from being an entrepreneur to getting into the corporate sector and then getting into the social sector. So my jump has been in a very disassociated manner. But long story cut short, I did not really think I would have a career in this field. But I always had some sort of inkling that, you know, I should make a difference to the world.
So there was this passion that you had inside to make a difference and contribute back to the society in some way or the other.
Yes and no. I don't think it was a passion at that point of time. It was just something that I kept asking myself. So I would wake up, you know, pretty much every morning to ask myself, what am I doing to better the world?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that stayed with me all throughout my life because I always wanted to make a difference to someone around me or the society around me. And so very often I would question myself, you know, am I really living a life which is valuable to others? Am I really doing something which is valuable for others? So I would question myself. Of course, I never really understood how passionate I was about this till quite late in the day. But, you know, never say never. I started this when I was, I think, I crossed 40s or almost 40 when I started this. And I had not really anticipated that I could make so much of a difference.
So tell me about your startup a little bit. What actually you do in this?
Right. So Invisible Scars was initially started off as a safe space on Facebook. As we know, social media is very connected. And so you can connect with people, different people across the world. And we created this safe space where anyone who's going through an abusive marriage or abuse or has abusive parents or siblings or whatever relationship and is present on social media can join us. And, you know, they can share what's happening with them and they can find people who've gone through the same thing. Sort of a community. You know, we no longer have those big community gatherings where we sit together and talk to each other. And families are becoming more nuclear now. And so the social media sort of made that space for us. And initially, that's how we started. But then over a period of time, we realized that we have to give a structure to what we are doing. Because in order to really help anyone, and then people actually started asking for help. So in order to help anyone, it's very critical to know the subject matter. It's very critical to understand those things. And so started the process of learning and helping people and learning along the way as well. And every day is a lesson. Every case is a lesson for someone like me. We are currently positioning ourselves as a support group. So if you come to us and you are facing pretty much any sort of gender-based violence, we will be able to guide you and connect you to your local resources. Our model has always been online. It's always been a digital model. So what we do is we pretty much connect you to the resources which are valuable for you and enable you to use those resources yourself. So we will not try and handhold you through everything. We will tell you the right way to go, the right people to meet, how to get your work done, who are the good lawyers, who are the good counselors, and things like that. We will connect you to where you have to report if you need to go to the police or helplines. But we are hoping that because the number of women who are facing domestic violence or domestic abuse is really, really high. So we are hoping that we enable women to fight their own battles. After this, we sort of realized that just helping them, you know, file a case or register a case or get counseling is not enough. Right. We realized that there's a very big gap in terms of jobs being available because a woman or a survivor of domestic abuse will often have a very checkered is not the right word, will have like a career graph which is very not in sync with each other, you know, so there will be gaps, there might be different sorts of experiences, and when someone from the corporate sector looks at that resume, it sort of looks very broken. So we started a job assistance program where we now support survivors who reach out to us. We help them structure their resumes. We help them, you know, apply for decent jobs. We really tell them what they are worth because most of the people who come to us are very low on self-esteem. And so we sort of try and help them work through those issues, focus on themselves, see what other skill sets they bring to the table. And recently we have started skilling survivors of domestic abuse also because we feel that sometimes when you're not working or you're not in the right frame of mind, you may have missed out on skill sets. If there's something that you can upskill or reskill yourself on, we will help you there. So currently our support group, we help you with resources to file your cases, to fight the abuse that's happening to you, to get you jobs and to rehabilitate you, at the same time empowering you to do all of those things. So we don't claim to do it ourselves. We want to help you do it yourself for yourself because we want you, ultimately, we are not going to be with you all throughout your journey. At some point, we will have to leave, you know, as a support group, but you should be able to continue your journey in a happy and, you know, fulfilled way.
So it's like you equip individuals with all the assets that is available and they have to surf through and, you know, become more capable of handling themselves.
I believe that everyone's capable of handling themselves.
True.
But some people are not.
Yeah, through your guidance and the support group, the connection, they have like some guidance that you all give, which otherwise was not there, I presume. I mean,
Right. No, so see what happens when someone goes through domestic violence or domestic abuse is a lot of their self-esteem and confidence is taken away.
True.
And so we try and help them work on that self-esteem and, you know, confidence all over again. But the idea is to ultimately empower them to do whatever they want. And so we don't claim to have all the resources, but we do try our best if anyone reaches out to us.
That itself is really, you know, supportive. And I'm sure it's going to reach out to many people through social media, as this is the medium which is very, very prevalent and it has a larger outreach. And listening to you right now, I'm sure the listeners will keep it in mind and will reach out to you in case if they need or any support.
Absolutely, we encourage people. If you feel, you should definitely look up our website. It's invisiblescars.in. If you at any point feel that, you know, something's happening to you which keeps you unhappy all the time, you feel you're facing domestic abuse, which is emotional in nature, or physical violence, which is more visual, you know, please reach out to us. We are there to help. We have a community. Please, you know, take advantage of all the resources that we are providing to you.
So is it only locally available in your area or is it pan-India?
So Hina, what we did is we always kept our model digital, like I said from the very beginning. Currently we have helped close to 1600 plus people from 48 cities and 9 countries. So what was common across all of these survivors was the fact that they were all Indians. And so culturally, we have a certain set of things that happen, when someone is facing abuse in the West versus when someone is facing abuse in India, it's handled a little differently because we have more family dynamics involved in the abuse. So it is not necessarily always intimate partner violence. There would be a lot of other elements of abuse. So if you're an Indian and, you know, this kind of abuse is happening to you, we encourage you to reach out. Because we are online, we have the ability to reach out. So suppose you reach out to us from a different country. It is not an issue because we will reach out to the local resource who can help you in that country. Or we will guide you. For example, Ministry of External Affairs has an entire document that tells you what you should do if you're an NRI. And so there is a whole list. So when you are thinking of getting married, say, to someone who's living outside of India, they have a whole guideline on what are things you should look for. So we do awareness, preventive measures, rehabilitation, all of the things. Of course, rehabilitation is local in India with the support of the people that we have tied up with the government, with our partners. But for everything else, we can help you. And we can guide you no matter which country you are based in.
That's wonderful. And I will be sharing all the links and your website along with the in the post, like. And I'm sure it will be real help because this information is, you know, it's not easily available. It's not even highlighted, I would say.
Right. And we always think that it's okay, you know, we should just go to the police and the police should file a case. We build a lot of stereotypes. We will tell you, you know, sort of how you can, if you want to report abuse, how you can do it through multiple channels. So we guide you in all of those aspects. And I would love it, if you would share our link, because that will be really critical for people who are seeking help.
Absolutely. And tell me, during your journey, personally or in this professional, this thing, in your startup journey, did you face any low moments? And if so, how did you cope?
Okay. So that's a very tricky question, Hina, because low moments, I think, are in every case we deal with. You know, there sometimes is a lot of disappointment when we are trying to help someone and they go back into an abusive marriage. Or in fact, as I'm talking to you today morning, we discovered that one of our survivors, the spouse has been abusing the child. And so such cases they obviously make you feel very low. Because you worked a lot, you've helped this person come out to a certain point, or, child abuse, of course, is unacceptable completely. And when things like this come up, there is a low point. But I think it's more important to focus on how you can make a difference to someone, someone's life. And probably that's what keeps me going, is that, so it doesn't matter if somebody has gone back, my doors are always open. You can always, if you choose to go back, that's your choice. We never force anything on the survivor. What we always do is we tell them it's your choice. So even if you go back and you say you want to come back again, we will support you through the entire journey once again. Of course, it's not easy to do, keeping yourself motivated all the time. But I've also realized that taking some off time is very critical. So now what I do is I maintain sort of a timing, and I tell survivors, unless it's really, really urgent, please don't call me up at night. So I fixed like a few hours. This is my family time. I'm only going to focus on myself at this time. I take a break once in a while, go out with my friends. So I do a whole lot of things to keep myself in a good mental space, because and we have to look at every case objectively. So if somebody goes back into an abusive relationship, for example, after we help that person, it's not a personal loss. So we try and at least I try and look at it very objectively, saying that, something would have driven that decision. Maybe it's not about me at all. So this is not a personal defeat. And that is what keeps me grounded also. It lets me see that, this person's gone back. Okay, what can we do to prepare so that if this person ever wants to leave and come back again, this is what we can do. So I'm giving this example constantly, because probably this is the biggest disappointment that happens. But the point I was trying to drive is that keeping yourself objective, a little detached, taking out some me time is very, very critical, especially in a profession which is so stressful.
You have made a very important point, especially when it's coming from a person like you who is exposed to so much pain and low moments. And listening and engaging yourself emotionally also at times when you listen to somebody. And this is a very relevant point, taking out your me time and a time wherein which you devote to your own family and for your own self.
Right. So the one lesson that I learned in my entire journey of being a social entrepreneur is that it's very critical to draw boundaries around you. And as an Indian girl and someone who's been raised in a very conservative society, boundaries are never taught to you. You're always forced to, you may not like probably an uncle or a cousin, but you'll always be forced to, don't you keep in touch with them? Nobody ever asks why, right? Why is it that you don't like this person? And so we never really learn how to draw boundaries. And I think that one of the most critical things that helps anyone is if you set the boundaries up front, whether it's a relationship or it's at your workplace or it's in your business, entrepreneurs like us, the boundary setting is very, very critical. It's an emotional aspect, hence not very widely understood. We understand numbers, we understand, all the startup lingo, we understand that, you have to make a pitch deck and you have to present a business plan. We don't know how to detach and set those boundaries for ourselves. As a startup founder, if you are always overworked, you're always tired, there's only very limited of the best you can give of yourself to your startup. And for any startup founder who knows this, or anyone in the entrepreneurial space, unless the passion is very, very high for what you are doing and it's just not an idea, you really have to give a lot of yourself. So I think boundary setting is one emotional aspect which a lot of startup founders ignore.
I was about to ask you any, tips for the person who are planning to do any startup or just stepped into a startup, and this is a very beautiful point that you have made, to have emotional boundary and to know, you know, not to burn out yourself completely.
Yes, yes, yes. And I have a couple of other words of advice.
Please do
also,
care.
Yeah. I have been an entrepreneur for the first 10 years of my life. And what I did realize is I was never 100% passionate about what I was doing. Of course, when I was doing this, there were very limited options of what I could do. Correct. But these days, that is not the case. So the options have opened up. The world has opened up. So you have to be very passionate about what you are doing. I've seen that most successful startup founders are people who are passionate about what they are doing. You know, they feel that by doing this, I can change the way something happens, right? And so passion, and we hear a lot of mentors and people in the startup ecosystem saying, oh, you know, you have to have passion. But what really drives you, that only comes when you have explored a lot of options, right? So the one thing I tell all startup founders is that, you know, you should have done some 4 or 5 things before you sort of come here so that you know what exactly you don't want to do. For example, I never wanted to get established as an entrepreneur once again, and I did not really enjoy the corporate sector. But when I started with Invisible Scars, all my experience as an entrepreneur, all my experience as a corporate person, all of it has fed into what I am doing today, right? Making me a slightly better entrepreneur than I used to be in the past. So I did have passion, but I knew what I don't want to do. I think that is very critical to identify. I don't want to do this. So when I don't want to do this, then I slowly start to arrive at what I want to do. And that is how you sort of discover what you are passionate about. You know, what really doesn't let you sleep. So Invisible Scars, I think Invisible Scars, I sleep Invisible Scars, I eat Invisible Scars. It's all the time the thing that I'm thinking of. You know, how can I make a difference? So whenever you find me in conversations with people, also of course not on my off time, but when I'm talking about work, you know, if anyone is sitting with me, I can probably discuss this for hours. So, you know, I would suggest that you do a lot of things to arrive. Startup is not just something where you get up one morning and you say, oh, because this person's making an app, I will also make another app. You know, you have to really figure out if that problem is worth solving and are you passionate enough to solve that issue. So that's pretty much one thing which I feel that a lot of startup founders ignore. Also, everything doesn't have to be. I mean, technology is a very good enabler. This is my opinion. It may not match with everyone else's, but technology is an excellent enabler. It speeds up the work, but it isn't everything. There is always a human angle to everything we do. And so for all startup founders, my advice is to find that human angle in whatever you do. Because when you solve something for another person is when people really start to feel, oh, this is great. So I probably will give very cliched examples of Swiggy and Zomato. And these were solving. So I remember, you know, when I was a single person living in Bangalore about 12, 13 years back, if I had to order food, I had to order food from the restaurants which were close to where I used to live. So 3 kilometers, I think, was the stretch. I could not order food for more than that. And as a single person, you know, I would probably order sometimes at 5 o'clock, sometimes at 8 o'clock. There was no fixed timing. So the restaurant had very fixed timings. It had a fixed menu. And so my options are very limited. But today, I don't need to bother about where I'm ordering the food from. So these food delivery apps identified the human aspect of this issue. And today, whether you're single or, you know, I know I can personally speak about being a single woman. So you don't have to worry. You can take an Uber, go wherever you want. You can order from Swiggy and Zomato till, you know, almost 12:30 in the night. So there is a whole lot of flexibility that has come into the human life. And all of these are targeting some human need or some human issue.
So it's like, you know, finding one's niche which benefits others and also oneself in the process.
Right. Mm-hmm. I would sort of put it more as maybe not benefiting, but, you know, something that taps into a need. You know, so a human need is not always very pronounced, right? Somebody's, but there is always that common thread across what people would find more convenient or easy and things like that. So use your technology, but, you know, don't forget the human aspect of your work. Focus on the human aspect of your work.
True. Any memorable experience you had, Ekta?
Yes.
Stands out, you know, maybe in your personal life, something that just, you know, stands out.
Okay, so I think, you know, it will sound very cliched, but my most memorable experience has been getting married. And for those of you who don't know, you know, my marriage to Vivek happened in 2012. Vivek had lost his first wife to cancer, and he had two, and we have two adopted daughters. And so, you know, when I sort of met him through shaadi.com, and when we kind of closed on getting married to each other, a lot of people came forward and told me, are you crazy? You're going to marry a man with children. What is wrong with you? This and that. Why it has been memorable for me is very critical. A, because we break a lot of stereotypes. You know, we tell you that life will always keep offering you chances, right? One of the things that I was told is, oh, you know, a man with children always wants a mother for his children, which wasn't the case. You know, he wanted a spouse. He needed a spouse. He needed a mother for his children. It was a combination of both the things. And so, you know, because of the whole stereotype breaking and the thing, the conditioning that we go through, we think, oh, this is how things are going to happen. And then, you know, when they are different, so we sort of are, we are a couple who got together when I was 37 and he was 43. 43. And, you know, the kids, our elder one was 11, younger one was 5 at that time. And we are all cohabitating together. We are doing okay. We have our ups and downs like every family does, but we are pretty much okay with each other. So that, I think, has been very memorable because it allowed me to grow as a person, because I didn't, when I was single, I was always focused on, okay, how do I take care of my finances? How do I take care of my money? How do I keep my job and things like that? And being with Vivek sort of gave me that freedom to go out, think a little bit. So I think 2012 has been one of the most memorable experiences. You know, marrying someone and then growing with them as a person. I think that's memorable for me.
That's a beautiful memory that you have shared. And I'm really happy for you and for everyone at home. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
It's always nice to, you know, listen to such beautiful experiences, which is inspirational, of course.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I hope a lot more people are sort of inspired to, you know, take a chance on life. Failure does not mean you cannot take any more chances. Failure simply means that, you know, if you don't get it in one shot, you have to go for the next. I think that's sort of how I look at it.
Absolutely. And that's a very good vision also. So
right. This
was Mrs. Ekta, a social entrepreneur, a dynamic lady, and a wonderful mother and wife who is inspiring every life she touches on with her personality. Thank you, Ekta.
Thank you. Sorry, please.
Yeah. Thank you, Ekta, for your valuable time and sharing such valuable information, let's say. That is very important for every person that is living in a family life or otherwise.
Thank you so much, Ina. Thank you for the opportunity. Like I said, it's always very exciting to do something for a friend. And I was very excited to do this. And I hope that, you know, someone can take away something from our conversation today.
Absolutely. I'm also very happy to listen to your journey. It is indeed very, very inspirational. And I would request all the listeners to please share and contact if needed to Invisible Scars. She's available on Facebook. And I will share the email ID also. Her website is there. Please do share and or connect whatever is needed. But sharing is caring. So I would request all the listeners to please share such an important information available on her website. And I hope everyone have a very good life.
Thank you to all your listeners, and hope, you know, everyone has a wonderful 2022.
Thanks a lot. Wish you the same. Take care and be safe. Bye. This is Mrs. Ekta Vivek Verma from India, a social entrepreneur and founder of a startup named Invisible Scars. Invisible Scars is a support group that helps domestic abuse survivors. She's also the founder of an initiative, Purn Viram, that fights against rape culture. Human issues caught Ekta's attention since young age. The fact that domestic abuse, which was normalized in the society, left her agitated. She wanted to make a difference and contribute in ways which would dismantle abuse in all forms. She had her ups and downs, but with the support of loved ones and family members, along with her time out, she balanced her life. The daunting work, where she encountered so many painful stories, is not easy to tackle. Her organization, as she had mentioned during the interview, is a platform to connect and guide the needful to the best resources available. Her vision is to work on awareness, empowerment, and provide resources to support GBV survivors, that's gender-based violence survivors. In case if you want to reach out to Ekta, you may visit her website www.invisiblescars.in, or you may also read about her on my Facebook page, Just Talk Therapy. I have shared all her contact details in my previous post. With that, I would like to conclude today's episode, hoping that you all will understand, and we all together need to understand, that no abuse is accepted in any form. We should respect each other the way they are. With that, I take my leave. See you next week with another guest and their inspiring story. Till then, take care and be safe. Bye.